Welcome to the Gregory Neesmith Show, a special delivery of underdog stuff. Shout out to all the folks in Harlem, in New York City, and listening around the world. I appreciate you wherever you are tuning in from. It's time for the Gregory Neesmith Show, a place where every week we explore how underdogs get our swagger back in today's society and culture. So much going on in today's society and culture. We want to make sure we get our swagger back and we keep it. And we do it every week from all the unangles, the unavoidable, the underreported, the unjust, the unbelievable, the unsaid, the unconventional, and more underdog stuff. And as always, topics inspired by some current events, some old events, some turnarounds, the ones that worked, and, you know, even the ones that didn't. I always feel like there's something to be learned when things don't work out quite as planned. Also, topics inspired by our personal lives and a pinch of politics. And as always, to take you on that journey, you have your host, Gregory Neesmith, certified coach, business consultant, content creator, and overall into exploring how underdogs get our swagger back in business and in life. Each show, you get to look forward to a couple segments, not always the same ones every week, but for the most part, we're going to get into some unavoidable news. We'll have a segment about one of the Swagger Back Commandments, something I know everybody looks forward to. We'll talk about the un of the week, maybe even unconventional idea too. And as always, we end every show with the underdog spotlight. With that, we're going to get into today, episode 86. I can't believe it. We are 14 episodes from 100. 100. I can't even think of the things I've done 100 times, but I'm grateful that I'm on the way to doing this 100 times and hopefully even more as we spread some special stuff. But today, episode 86, I'm going to call it Bad Habits. The bad habits in the White House, bad habits in Hollywood, and yeah, we got some bad habits in our personal lives. With that, let's get into it. Unavoidable news of the week. It seems like the Trump administration, the Trump orbit, Trump's peoples, whatever term you want to use, seem to have a bad habit of having a shaky, at best, relationship to the truth, to facts. Maybe it's just me, but feels shaky to me. And evidenced by, this seems like it was years ago because the news cycles come so quickly, but not too long ago, Kellyanne Conway, who is in the Trump administration, part of his team, shared her shaky relationship that she had to facts. Remember this?
Why the president asked the White House press secretary to come out in front of the podium for the first time and utter a falsehood. Why did he do that? It undermines the credibility of the entire White House press office
Be so, don't be so overly dramatic about it, Chuck. What it, you're saying it's a falsehood, and they're giving Sean Spicer, our press secretary, gave alternative facts to that. But the point remains.
Wait a minute. Alternative facts, four of the five facts he uttered. Zeke Miller, four of the five facts he uttered were just not true. Look, alternative facts are not facts. They're falsehoods.
Chuck Todd doing his interviewing and journalism there on Meet the Press with Kellyanne Conway, and White House shaky relationship with the facts and the truth, telling us that there's facts and then there's alternative facts. But I'm thinking, all right, cool, got it. A little off their rocker there. Nothing like that would ever happen again. Maybe things will get better. Maybe she just had a bad day. But fast forward to just last week. I know, underdogs, you think you know that the truth is the truth. But it turns out that according to the Trump administration and Rudy Giuliani and some of the folks in Trump's orbit, the truth really isn't the truth. This bad habit of having a shaky relationship with the facts and the truth just showed up again for the Trump administration just a few days ago with this.
So what I have to tell you is, look, I'm not going to be rushed into having him testify so that he gets trapped into perjury. And when you tell me that, you know, he should testify because he's going to tell the truth and he shouldn't worry, well, that's so silly because it's somebody's version of the truth, not the truth. He didn't have a conversation.
Truth is
about,
truth. I don't mean to go like.
It isn't truth. Truth isn't truth. The president of the United States says, I didn't.
Truth is a truth. Mr. Mayor, do you realize what I
No, no, no.
This is going to become a bad
Don't do this to me.
Don't do truth is
Donald
a truth
Trump,
to me.
Donald Trump says, I didn't talk about Flynn with Comey. Comey says, you did talk about it. So tell me what the truth is.
Don McGahn might
if
know.
You're such a genius, Don McGahn doesn't know. If that's the situation.
Underdogs, please don't ever use the term truth isn't truth. It's just not a good look. But I get it. Rudy. Trump, the whole, all of them, they're a little nervous about the truth because recently some of Trump's people have had a little run-in with the law. Paul Manafort, formerly campaign manager for a little bit of time for Donald Trump during his campaign to become president, was found guilty on 8 counts of financial crimes. That would get me a little nervous if somebody who used to work for me was in trouble with the law. And then Michael Cohen, a.k.a. known as The Fixer, I don't think it's very good when you get the nickname The Fixer, but was admitted to guilt on 8 charges as part of a plea deal. And his plea deal, as part of that, he could face 3 to 6 years in jail. So it sounds like he wants to do some talking instead of spending a lot more time in jail. And so I get it. If I was Trump and those folks, I would probably be looking for alternative facts and some different truths. Because it seems like some people who are close to me might be in a little bit of trouble, which maybe means he could be in a little trouble. We'll see. You know, what do you think? Is Trump on his path to getting impeached? Or do we still have 6 more years to go this term and maybe even the second term? We'll see. I mean, I'm no political commentator, although I do play one on the radio from time to time. And I would just close this story with saying this. There's an old saying I'm often reminded of, that we're all allowed to have our own opinions. However, we're not allowed to have our own facts. And so my only thought on this would be, underdogs, don't be like Rudy and don't be like Kellyanne Conway. There's no alternative facts and the truth is the truth. With that, unavoidable news story of the week, number 2, bad habits in Hollywood. How many people have heard of the term window versus the mirror? Mirror versus the window. It's a metaphor for how things in the arts and entertainment land on each one of us. There's certain things that are out there, certain movies, when I look at them, they're like a window for me to see out into the world. And some movies, some TV shows, some things, I look at them and they're mirrors. I look at them and I see a reflection of me. To use a political example before I get into an actual entertainment one, think about any of our youth who are, let's say, about 18 years old now. 10 years ago in 2008, as they were about 8 years old and entering into their formative years, all they knew from 8 years old, for most of their life of like truly paying attention to what may be going on around them, they saw a black man as the president of the United States. Now, all of us who are older, we're like, this is a big deal. We looked at presidents 1 through 43, and they all look a certain way. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, this kid here is doing his own thing. Number 44 looks a little different. But if you were a little kid, you're like, hey, all you knew was a brother as president. And then in 2016, even though Hillary Clinton didn't win, still, as a kid, all you know is there's this brother who was president, then these women, Jill Stein, Hillary Clinton, running for president. And all you know is that, oh, this president thing must be a very diverse job did they hire for? Because that's what you saw growing up. And the things we consume, I think, have an impact on us. They help us see the world in a certain way. So now let's get to entertainment. And Hollywood's bad habit with diversity. I'll never forget, I was a little kid. I want to say, not even a little kid, teenage years. And there was this movie with Eddie Murphy in it. And he was, his character was Marcus. Marcus! And he was a marketing executive. He was dating this woman who was played by Robin Givens. Then he was also dating this woman who's played by Halle Berry. Then in the end, he ends up with Halle Berry. He was launching all these fun campaigns. Grace Jones played a role in the movie. And I just remember thinking, this brother looked like he's having a ball. Launching campaigns, going to black tie events, lived in a nice apartment, had this wonderful office, dating these beautiful women, ends up with Halle Berry. He's a marketing executive. And I'm thinking to myself, I want to be a marketing executive. I don't even know exactly what they do, but Eddie looks like he's having a ball. And that movie was called Boomerang. And while it wasn't the only reason that I would end up going into a 16-year marketing career at Kraft Foods and Mondelez International before leaving to go do some of the things I do now, it was definitely one of the moments that solidified my interest in this thing calling being a businessman and helping me visualize just what could be possible if I ended up doing in reality what Eddie Murphy, his role called Marcus, what he did in fiction or in the movies. And so that would be an example of a mirror. I saw someone that looked like me, and it inspired me to want to go out and do something. It was a mirror. And at the same time, there's also things that are windows, right? If I was watching Pretty Woman, well, Richard Gere, Julia Roberts, I don't necessarily relate to them as well, but it's cool to see how the folks are living, Wolf on Wall Street, things like that. It's cool to have a window to what's going on in the outside world. And I don't think there should be an either or. I think there's value in both. But unfortunately, in Hollywood, sometimes we don't have both. I read a study that said in recent years, of the top 500 movies, I believe, that were put out, only 29% of them had a female protagonist, a female lead. 29%. That just feels odd, especially since we know women are at least somewhere between 49 to 51% of the population. You mean to tell me that none of us want to watch women as the lead in a movie? That doesn't make sense to me. And, you know, I have my story about my boomerang experience. You have your story about your movie experiences. And the cool thing is, this month, there are some crazy rich Asian experiences, too. A new movie came out that actually highlights some of the Asian and Asian American experience. And just maybe, there's some folks who now have a new mirror to look in when they go to the movies. Here's a little bit of background on that.
But, you know, to be represented, we're not just a token for diversity. You know, to be real representation means you have a meaningful character that has hopes and dreams. And in Crazy Rich Asians, that's what we all have. It's so diverse, but at the same time, it's got heart. It's about love, it's about family. And I think it really shows the other side of the Asians to our friends around the world. And it will be very impactful because it's a studio movie. Mm-hmm. It's not just an indie film.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
on TV. So I think that will inspire more behind the scenes, in front of the camera.
Yeah. It's a big deal. I remember how excited I was to go see Black Panther. I gotta believe there's a lot of folks right now who have been and will be and are excited to go see Crazy Rich Asians. It's a movie that is based off a book by Kevin Kwan about his story of growing up in Singapore. His grandfather helped invent Tiger Bomb. His cousin Nancy Kwan was one of Hollywood's first Asian stars. And as a kid, they bred these exotic fish that now sell for up to $300,000 each. Now that bio, to me, you know how they say sometimes the truth is stranger than fiction? That sounds like a movie right there. Well, I guess that's why they made a movie about it. But this is a big deal. Why? Because there's very few roles in Hollywood available to Asian American actors. Supposedly, research says that they get only about or less than 5% of speaking roles, and they're definitely more than 5% of the American population. And then if, let's not even count. They're definitely more than 5% of the world's population if we want to broaden our view out. And, you know, there's been this whole thing about Asian actors have always struggled in the United States, along with other minority groups. While researching the story, I found out something that was crazy. There was something called the Hays Codes in the 1930s, where Hollywood, or I should say the church, started to see the power of cinema. And so they sent this dude, I forget his first name, but his last name was Hays, to Hollywood to actually come up with restrictions and certain codes to keep films wholesome and moral. And as an example, one of the codes was no interracial marriages depicted in movies. And these codes stayed in effect for decades. And we still actually, I would say, have some of the repercussions of it still to this day. But it's crazy. I actually open up to everybody, if you can, Google Hays Code, H-A-Y-S code. You will be disgusted, shocked, but also enlightened as to just some of the, you know, an example of where we get some of our bad habits, at least when it comes to Hollywood and diversity. And things like the Hays Code and led to whitewashing, which is a term of Hollywood cinema, where you would actually cast roles that seemed like they were very well suited for a minority, but you'd cast them with a white person. And yeah, stuff like that even still happens to this day. And it's a big deal whenever movies like Black Panther come out, or this movie Crazy Rich Asians. Let me know. Have you seen it? Did you like it? I will say, though, because I know this comes up when I'm talking about a lot of black movies, you know, even for Crazy Rich Asians, the whole idea of no good deed goes unpunished came up here. There has been some criticism about the lack of browner faces, which could represent Singapore's Indian populations. It's led to some Twitter hashtags and folks even calling for more diversity amongst the diverse film of Crazy Rich Asians. But hey, it happens. I think it also just points to when we don't have a lot of variety, we put even more emphasis on the one or two chances we get. So I get that Crazy Rich Asians is getting some pushback, but I say salute to them for making this happen. Supposedly it's the first all predominantly Asian cast movie since the Good Joy Luck Club, I believe it is. It came out like 25 years ago, the Joy Luck Club in 1993. So shout out to all the folks holding it down for the Crazy Rich Asians. Shout out to all the folks trying to break a bad habit in Hollywood around diversity. And shout out to all you underdogs out there, especially those of you in creative spaces, actors, actresses, producers, writers. Shout out to you for continuing to put out new material, and just know that you're inspiring somebody, because for somebody, the work that you put out becomes a mirror for them. And just maybe you'll be their boomerang, like Eddie and Boomerang was for me, or you'll be their Crazy Rich Asian, or you'll be something that helps them see themselves in a different way and in a positive way, and at the same time helps break the bad habit of diversity in Hollywood. Let's talk about some of our own bad habits. You know we can't get out of here without getting personal about the news and the culture. It's the Gregory Neesmith Show. We're not just going to talk about other people. We're going to talk about ourselves too. Looked up on businessinsider.com and Self Magazine. Shout out to Megan, my producer, who always gets me ready to go so I can come in here and sound like I know what I'm talking about. Appreciate you, Megan. And she found 10 of the most popular bad habits that Americans have. Eating tons of fast food, skipping lunch breaks, going nuts on Black Friday, aka spending too much and going into debt, working crazy hours, being addicted to social media. We'll get to that in a second, in our cell phones. Watching TV all day, using electronics before bed, comparing ourselves to others on social media. That's a bad, bad habit too. Complaining nonstop. And number 10, procrastinating. I've definitely done some combination of all of those, with the exception of the spending a lot on Black Friday. That has been a habit I've been able to avoid. But the others, at some point, I'm sure I have done. Like cable TV. I've sometimes watched so much cable, so much TV, almost into like a veggie state, just mesmerized by the TV. And that habit stopped me from being creative. So one of the things I did was get rid of my cable so that I could consume less and create more. I've talked about this on some past shows. I used to watch a bit too much adult internet porn. Bad habit. And what that used to do is get in the way of me being even more present and connected to my partner at the time. Bad habit I was able to get over. Also, I've had some bad habits about just doing too much, thinking I need to do things myself. Nobody can do it like I do it, which, by the way, is one of my favorite sayings. But I used to take it in the wrong context of trying to do things alone instead of doing things in partnership with others. Got rid of that bad habit, and more often than not, good things, expansive things, abundant things happen when I don't try to go it alone. But habits are a big deal. We all have them, good ones and bad ones, and there's some science to them. There's this thing called the habit loop. I don't know if you've heard of the habit loop. There's some cues. There's some routines we get into. There's rewards, and this loop happens over and over again. And when something's not working, you get to break it. But as I say, sometimes it's hard to change something that you don't even know is a problem. So let's hear a little bit more about what this whole habit loop thing is about.
Every habit functions the same way. At first, there's a cue, some type of trigger that makes the behavior unfold automatically. Studies tell us that a cue can be a location, a time of day, a certain emotional state, other people, or just a pattern of behaviors that consistently triggers a certain routine. The next part in the habit loop is the routine, the behavior itself. The last part of the habit loop is the reward. And in some respects, the reward is the most important part because that's why habits exist, so that we can get the rewards that we want. Studies have shown that if you can diagnose your habits, you can change them in whichever way you want.
Underdogs, what's one of your bad habits that you are going to work on coming up with a new habit, an alternative, a change as we end summer and head into the fall? To me, changing the seasons is one of the great opportunities to look at a habit that we want to change. And the reason why I bring this up is, as we talk about the 10 Swagger Commandments, how we go from, you know, underdog to top dog, how we rediscover our special stuff, we get our swagger back in today's society and culture. One of the commandments is called Puff Puff, I'll Pass. And the reason why I added that as one of the commandments is that one thing I've noticed with myself and other underdogs that I work with is that I can have, or we can have, all our emotional and mental work done to get rid of some things from our past we want to unlearn. We can know what our vision is and who we want to serve. We can have our partners and people we want to be in partnership with to make stuff happen. We're on our way, right, from Front Street, moving on to Swaggerback Boulevard. And then while we're out there playing and getting into action, there's these things that keep being headwinds and getting in our way, some of our habits. And so to me, we can't have a conversation about turning things around unless we're having conversations also about some of our habits. And some of them are getting in your way. Some of them are getting in my way. And so I want to make sure we had an episode where we talked about it. Now, the cool thing is about this loop is that there's science behind it, and there's ways that we can actually go about creating a new loop. And I was reading an article in Inc. magazine called Want to Break a Bad Habit? Science says do these four things. And those four things are this. One, identify the stages. So think about a bad habit you have. What's the cue? What triggers it? What's the routine you have? And then what's the reward? What are you really getting from it? And then number two, they say explore alternatives. Think about what else could give you whatever core need your current bad habit is satisfying for you. What are some other routines that can still give you that same feeling, that same reward, and be more uplifting, be more empowering, give you more, you know, momentum as opposed to getting in your way. Number three, they say commit to change and tweak as you go. You know, experiment, try stuff out. The first couple of things you do to try to change a bad habit may or may not work. So be open to testing and learning different routines to get to that same reward. And then lastly, and I think this one is a big deal, and sometimes I don't do this enough, which is anticipate setbacks. Guess what? You're going to try something new. You're probably going to fall back into the bad habit a couple times before you change it. And I know a lot of you have heard studies that say it takes 3 weeks, 21 days to start a new habit and make it solidified, cemented. In some of my research, I've also seen and heard that it can take up to 3 months, which is a little bit longer than 3 weeks. But I love knowing that it could be 3 months because combine that with this whole idea of anticipate setbacks, which the science says we should. And what happens is you can, and we can give ourselves a little bit more grace, a little bit more forgiveness that changing the habit takes some time and has some ups and downs. So it's all good. So next time you want to change a habit, which could be like literally today, as we get ready to end the summer and get into the fall, identify the stages, the cue, the routine, and the reward, explore some different alternatives, commit to some new change, and then, you know, anticipate that it might take longer than 3 weeks, might take 3 months. Setbacks come along with it, but you and I can do it. What bad habit are you going to change this fall? I got a couple that I'm bouncing around in my head with that I'm going to figure out which one I'm going to focus on. But I will add this before we go to break and then come back with a big finish to the show. I don't think any of these habits or journey of turning things around we should go on alone. And I really am a big fan of all of us, each of us getting these three people in our lives, a therapist, a best friend, and a mentor. All three have been a big deal for me, and I've seen them be a big deal for other folks that I work with. They can help along the way with going through something like getting some new habits. So, you know, we can do it. You can do it. Share. Let me know. You can reach out to me at gregory@gregoryneesmith.com. Let me know a habit that you're going to work on. And if you share there, I will share anonymously your bad habit that you're working on the air and let other folks know, because I'm sure you are not alone in wanting to work on that. Shout out to all the folks listening online. Shout out to Nicole Renee, who says that one of her bad habits that she's going to stop, get rid of, is this whole idea of dwelling on things, especially things from the past, especially things that have some negative energy and negativity attached to them. Forgive yourself. Let it be in the past and move on, move forward. So shout out to Nicole Renee for checking in. And RE in the building, I appreciate you. And hello back to you. I saw you said hello too. And shout out to Orion, who said, great show. She said she had to run, but she appreciated going on the journey today. Shout out to Orion too. With that, let's do the honor of the week. Honor of the week has to do with a bad habit that you have, I have, with our cell phones.
More really interesting data indicates that young people spend 119 minutes a day on their phones and only 97 minutes a day with their partners. So that's also really scary because we're spending more time on technology than we are with actual people that we care the most about.
Woo! Let that sink in for a second. People are spending more minutes per day with a device than they are with the people in their lives. That's a place that I don't think any of us want to really be. But let's dive into the under week. There was a recent survey conducted by Bank of America of about 1,000 people all over the age of 18 that showed around 71% of people sleep with their phone in their bed or on their nightstand. But that's not the under of the week. The under of the week is 35% of people reach for their phones in the morning before they reach for their loved one laying next to them in bed. Let me say that one more time. 35% of people reach for a phone before they reach for the loved one that they are laying next to in bed. And before I start throwing some stones from my glass house, I've been there. I've been that guy before too, reaching for my phone instead of reaching for the woman who's laying next to me that I really, really like. I'm picking up a phone. Is that unjust? Or is it just right for these times? This is a big deal. Are you saying to yourself, well, I'm sleeping next to them. I got love for them. They know I love them, but you know, I got to reach for my phone. I got to shut off my alarm. Or I got to check my emails. I got stuff to do. It's the world we live in. It's fast paced. My love is continuous. It doesn't matter that I pick up a phone in the morning instead of acknowledging the person laying next to me. 35%. Are you part of 35? No judgment if you are. I've been there. That's the under the week. We got some bad habits with our cell phones. And whether this is unjust or just right for the times, while it may be just right for the times, I do think it is unjust. I do think that I have let technology at times get ahead of some etiquette and manners that I was raised with. And I do believe that it is better to acknowledge the loved one laying next to me than it is to acknowledge some device. And so with that, I actually have thought a lot about this whole idea of cell phones and bad habits. And recently I wrote an article called 4 Ways to Break Bad Cell Phone Habits, which was recently published on thriveglobal.com and is also on my website at gregorynesmith.com. So I encourage you, go over to my website, gregorynesmith.com, or go over to Thrive Global, search 4 Ways to Break Bad Cell Phone Habits, authored by me. And you'll see my ideas for what I call a new cell plan. And the C stands for cut some apps and notifications. The E stands for evict the phone from certain rooms. The L, leave your phone in your pocket. And the last L in cell stands for go live, as in person, as instead of going live on your phones. But with that, you can definitely read more about that. Let me know your thoughts. Tweet me, email me. Let me know your thoughts on the 4 ways to break bad cell phone habits. But it's time for the big finish to the show. We end every episode with Underdog Spotlight. Talked earlier about habits, some bad habits in Hollywood, some bad habits in the White House, but we got bad habits too. And I mentioned several of them: eating tons of fast food, skipping lunch breaks, working crazy hours, watching too much TV, being attached to our electronic devices, comparing ourselves to people nonstop, especially on social media, procrastinating, being a couple that were reported as top bad habits in selfmagazine.com and Business Insider. But I want to talk quickly about procrastination. It's definitely been one of my bad habits too. And to talk about like a big procrastination, I knew since I was about 10 years old that I wanted to be a talk radio host. And I waited till I was almost 38 years old, almost 3 full decades before I finally took the leap to try it out and do it. And fast forward to today, it's finally a reality. But I definitely waited a long time. And it's one of the reasons why I believe that we, no matter how long we've waited to do something, part of getting our swagger back and rediscovering our special stuff is to finally go for it, whenever that finally time comes for you. And I also know that, especially for those of you who are entrepreneurs, or especially those in the world of entertainment, that you may have feel like you waited too long, or you may feel like the odds are stacked against you because maybe you're a Crazy Rich Asian, or maybe you're a Black Panther, and maybe you're just like, man, it's few opportunities out there for me. And even if I go for it, it may or may not happen. But I'm here to tell you that there's folks out there who have started later in life, in their 30s or 40s. And I'll use some entertainers just because they're popular folks that we all know and can hopefully somewhat relate to. But folks like Felicia Rashad, Oprah Winfrey, Taraji P. Henson, Samuel Jackson, Ava DuVernay, most of those folks that you now know didn't really get momentum, didn't really get their careers going until in their 30s or 40s. So underdogs, you don't have to be a young whippersnapper to go out there and go make a dream happen or to go get your swagger back and go from Front Street to Swaggerback Boulevard. With that, though, I do want to end with the spotlight of a special woman who did get her fame and her start a little late, but Viola Davis, who was very accomplished in her own right through a lot of her early years as an actress, really got her big claim to fame as Professor Annalise Keating in the show How to Get Away with Murder. And she's now a big household name, and she became the first African-American woman to win an Emmy Award for Outstanding Leading Actress in a Drama Series at age 49. Underdogs, you can start whenever, but definitely keep going, because even if you're getting a late start, you can still become a mirror, like Viola Davis has become a mirror to many Black women and other women of color. And she is the underdog spotlight and someone who has chipped away at one of Hollywood's bad habits when it comes to diversity. And so I want to play this clip of her accepting that award and helping us understand that oftentimes underdogs, the only thing separating you from someone else is opportunity.
In my mind, I see a line. And over that line, I see green fields and lovely flowers and beautiful white women with their arms stretched out to me over that line. But I can't seem to get there no how. I can't seem to get over that line. That was Harriet Tubman in the 1800s. And let me tell you something. The only thing that separates women of color from anyone else is opportunity. You cannot win an Emmy for roles that are simply not there. So here's to all the writers, the awesome people that are Ben Sherwood, Paul Lee, Peter Nowak, Shonda Rhimes, people who have redefined what it means to be beautiful, to be sexy, to be a leading woman, to be Black. And to the Taraji P. Hensons, the Kerry Washingtons, the Halle Berrys, the Nicole Beharis, the Megan Goods, to Gabrielle Union, thank you for taking us over that line. Thank you for the Television Academy. Thank you.
And thank you, Viola Davis. It's time to say some goodbyes and some shout outs. And then we'll do it again next week. As you know, always here, live show Sunday on WATR 90.3 FM, The Voice of Harlem, and then podcast on Monday. With that, I want to say thank you to all the underdogs for listening, for commenting throughout the show. Also, shout out to the live show producer, Megan. Shout out to my podcast editor, Kayla. Also, if you want to know more about Underdog Stuff, the company, you can go to my website at gregorynesmith.com. Let's work together. Let's figure out how we can help underdogs rediscover their special stuff and get their swagger back in business and in life. And with that, if you listened to the show before, you know how I'm going to end the show. I'm going to end it with my favorite quote. Underdogs, can't nobody do it like you do it. Nobody. Peace. One.